fly in the sky. I can go twice as high. Take a look, it's in a book, a reading rainbow.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. You might remember the theme song for the PBS television show Reading Rainbow, which worked to nurture the love of reading in children. The show aired for 21 seasons until 2006, but the challenge of getting children to read for pleasure is no less urgent. The editor of the New York Times Book Review with the Times Children's Book Review Editor has written a new book on the topic titled How to Raise a Reader. New York Times Book Review Editor Pamela Paul joins us. Welcome to the show. Pamela Paul? Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Pamela Paul. Are you there?
Hi, this is, yes.
Hi.
Happy to be here.
Hi, thanks. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, this book, I have to say, is both been a passion and a mission. I am the parent of three children. They are now 10, 12, and 14, but this is the book that I wish I had had when they were just born, because like most parents, I knew that I wanted my kids to be readers, not just because, obviously, for me, books are a major part of my life, but because I'm aware of all the research out there that I think most parents are aware of, which show that, you know, reading is important not only for a child's cognitive development, but for their academic success. And now even more, we're learning for their executive function, for their social and emotional development. But even, you know, beyond sort of all of those kind of goal-oriented reasons, I love books. I think that books enrich us as human beings. They enrich us. They enrich our culture. And so I definitely wanted my kids to be a part of that.
And when you're talking about raising a reader, you're talking about raising somebody who loves to read, not somebody who's necessarily good at reading.
Right. I mean, the mechanics of reading, most of us, even those kids who have to deal with some kind of learning disability or with dyslexia or whatever it might be, most people do eventually learn how to read. That is actually not our job as parents or grandparents or caregivers. That's the school job. The school's job. They teach the child how to read. We need to teach children how to love to read, because they have lots of other things they can do with their spare time. So if they aren't intrinsically motivated to read books, to choose that instead of, say, going on Instagram or playing Fortnite or, you know, doing any number of, you know, extracurricular activities that they have in their schedule, then we're not succeeding in raising readers.
There's the technology change. A lot of people are reading online. They're reading using their Kindle or their tablet. There's a lot of emphasis in the book put on the whole tactile experience of reading from infancy on.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of reasons to read in print rather than to read on a screen. But let me say first that reading is reading is reading. You know, it's all text. It's all good. It can be on a Monopoly card, you know, in a board game. It can be a baseball card. It can be scrolling through your Twitter feed. You are still reading. That said, there is a lot that you get out of a book, and specifically out of a print book. Most research shows that people absorb information and retain it better when they're reading a book. And I think for most grown-ups, this makes sense. I think all of us have had the experience of, you know, trying to read on a screen and getting endless notifications and being easily distracted. Many people I know can't even have a phone in the room when they're reading, because even if you have your notifications turned off, you kind of know that it's there, right? And reading is an immersive sort of, you know, full dive in experience. So you want to, you know, to be in a situation where you get fully absorbed. Well, for kids, it's the same thing. And kids, I would say, are even, you know, more liable to be easily distracted. So books, I think, are the best way to become a reader. And for that, you know, again, it's very important, even if you are reading a book on a Kindle, to let your child know that that's what you're doing on your Kindle or on your tablet or on your phone, because otherwise, for all they know, you're, you know, checking in on Facebook.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is New York Times Book Review editor Pamela Paul. She with the children's book editor for the New York Times, Maria Russo, has written a new book. It's called How to Raise a Reader. If you have a question or comment about how to raise a reader, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're also going to have a guest from the Columbus Metropolitan Library in later on in the show to talk about how they work on this issue. And listeners, I would love to know if you can name your first favorite book. I'll name mine if you'll name yours. I think that's really important. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Do you ever think about that, Pamela Paul, your first favorite book?
Oh, I think about my first 20 favorite books, yeah. You know. And I think, again, this is one of the reasons why we wanted to write this book for parents, which is most of us, when we have kids, we don't know all of the new children's books out there. You know, most people aren't sort of staying abreast of that world. And so it can be really overwhelming when you walk into a children's bookstore or the children's section of your library. People don't know all of the books that are out there. And that's one reason why backlist children's books, you know, the books that were around when you were a kid or when I was a kid, Dr. Seuss, Richard Scarry, those kinds of books continue to sell really well. It's not just because those books are good, because they are great books, but it's also because they're familiar to us. And, you know, that's what kind of people fall back on when they aren't aware of all of the other books out there. One reason why we included so many recommendations in our book is because the world of children's literature has changed a lot since then in many, many good ways, so that it is really, I think, important. It's good for parents to catch up on all those new books, not just to rely on the ones that we grew up on, because today's children's books speak to children today. They're more diverse. They speak to contemporary situations. I think there are probably, you know, I've seen at least 20 picture books specifically about phones and screen media, just sort of helping kids navigate that. So it's good to keep up on the new ones, as well as to think back on the, you know, books that we loved, you know, the I Am a Bunny by Richard Scarry, which was, you know, one of my childhood favorites.
You know, I think about some of the Seuss books. One of the ways he avoided, created diversity was by using things like the Sneetches and that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They're still very relevant.
Yes. And animals are also, a traditional way in books to avoid gender, for example, so that it's interesting, you know. Boys read less than girls. That statistic continues. And there are a lot of reasons why. One interesting thing is that most boys do not want to read about a female protagonist after a certain age. You kind of like after they're 6, 7, 8 years old, they don't want to read about, you know, Belinda Bunny anymore. You end up having more male protagonists, or you can go into animals because you can kind of anyone can identify with them, whatever their gender or their race. And then another interesting thing about boys and reading is that boys and girls see their mothers reading more often than they see their fathers reading. And kids model themselves after what their parents are doing. So, and then interestingly, both fathers and mothers read more frequently to their daughters than they do to their sons.
That's interesting. So, why? Yeah, do we know?
I have two sons and a daughter, so I think about this a lot. But, you know, there is a kind of the bookish boy is not a real icon in our culture. So I do think that it behooves all of us, educators, parents, grandparents, to kind of counteract that idea that, you know, books are somehow not for boys. And here's another interesting thing, though. A lot of people say, well, my son doesn't like reading. He says books are boring. A lot of boys aren't necessarily going to be sitting down with Little House on the Prairie. They don't all want to read long narrative novels in the way that many adults think of as like real books. Boys often want to read books about baseball statistics, or they want to look at, you know, 101 wacky facts about sea creatures, or they want to read Ripley's Believe It or Not, or they want to read graphic novels or comic books. So one of the things we emphasize in our book is that those are books, too. So if you make sure that your son, your child feels validated in his choices of reading, that he, you know, you don't sort of look down on those choices or discourage them, then you're helping him become a reader, because kids aren't going to want to read unless they have books that they want to read.
How do you define a love of reading?
A love of reading. Wow. Many different ways. I could like write a whole love poem about the many different ways. But I would say that a love of reading is really when that's something that you choose to do, and that it leads to, you know, sort of it. You're doing it because you want to do it. You have intrinsic motivation. You find it fulfilling, satisfying. I mean, for me, for example, I love movies and I love TV. But reading is, I think, kind of uniquely fulfilling as a means of conveying a story, right? Human beings, we love stories. We like them in all their forms. But I think books are different because a book is truly interactive in that the reader is creating the book alongside the author. So one example of this is if you think about Harry Potter. When you're reading J.K. Rowling's book, you're deciding what the characters look like. You're deciding what they sound like. You're imagining what Hogwarts is like, what the Patronus spell looks like. If you see the movie, you're seeing Emma Watson's version of what Hermione sounds like. You're seeing the cinematographer's vision of what Hogwarts looks like on, you know, a winter night. You're getting all of the, you know, people who are very creative and talented people who are involved in that process. You're getting their interpretation. But if you're reading it, you're creating all of that yourself. And that gets back to, you know, one of the original things you said about, you know, those books that we loved as children, why they stick with us for so long. It's because we are the storyteller as well as the story receiver when we read a book. And that's a very powerful, you know, that's a very powerful thing for not just for children, but for adults. That's what makes, I think, the impact of a story through a book that much more profound.
And when we're kids, I don't know about you, but I reread books a gazillion times when I was a kid.
It's really funny because a lot of parents get concerned about this, okay? Either they think, like, my kid is still reading Harry Potter or whatever it might be, The Hunger Games, reads it over and over and over. Why won't he move on? Why won't she find something new to read? There's so many great books out there. There's a really good reason for rereading. When you reread a book, first of all, as a kid, you're getting something more out of it each time you read it. Just as even when you're an adult, you get something from rereading a book because you're at a different place in your life. You might notice things that you didn't see the first time. But it's even more profound when you are a child because you're developing and changing all the time as a kid. So you might see things in a book that you read in fifth grade that you didn't see when you first read it in third grade. I mean, Harry Potter, again, is another mm-hmm. interesting example here because a lot of kids read it when they're really young. They're just so eager to get into it that if they have the mechanics of reading down, they go ahead and they read it, even though the story itself is really for older children. So when they go back to it the second time, they'll see all of these things and things will affect them in different ways. You know, the death of Cedric at the end of book four has mm-hmm. a very different feeling for someone who's Cedric's age when they read it than like for, you know, a first grader who sort of reads it really young. And then, you know, I would also say for little kids with picture books, yeah. it's really important to read and reread and reread because that is part of the way that they acquire language. It's part of word recognition. It is helpful in terms of the mechanics of reading. And it's also, you know, kids love habits. They like familiarity. They like comfort. It's emotionally, you know, it's an emotionally resonant experience for them. So rereading books is good. Even if you've read Goodnight Moon 20,000 times, still read it again.
My guest is Pamela Paul. She's editor of the New York Times Book Review and co-author with her fellow editor, Maria Russo, of a new book. It's titled How to Raise a Reader. Pamela Paul will be in Columbus in November. For more information about that, it is a public event. Check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And I'd love to hear from listeners about what's your favorite book from childhood? What's the one that kind of grabbed you and held on to you and that you look back now with fondness and, if you're like me, still reread it sometimes. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Mike Thompson.
And I'm Steve Brown, and we are the hosts of Snollygoster, WOSU's podcast all about politics in Ohio.
Each week, we chat about what the shrewd politicians at the State House are up to and how national politics affects us here at home.
Find out why listeners have called us a weekly must-listen. For a lighthearted yet in-depth look at Ohio politics, subscribe to Snollygoster wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how to raise a reader who loves to read. I'd like to hear what you, what your first book that you loved and turned you into a reader was. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Still with us is the editor of the New York Times Book Review, Pamela Paul, who with her fellow editor, Maria Russo, the New York Times children's books editor, wrote a new book. It's titled How to Raise a Reader. They'll be in Columbus later on in November. If you want to check out that public event, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org. Joining us is Public Services Director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, Kathy Shabadogi. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Kathy, you've worked at the public library for more than three decades. And when you first started, kids obviously were not digital natives back then. Now you're dealing with a whole nother generation that has everything they need, you know, informationally at their fingertips.
You're right. Times have changed, but I'm pleased to be able to share that books today are not only as good, but even more wonderful, more diverse, and more engaging than ever before. So at the library, in the children's book world, wherever, there are books for every child, without a doubt.
I grew up in a house filled with books. I love to go to the library because there are so many books around. And Pamela Paul, you write about just the having books around and having them everywhere, how important that is.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, most people know that it's really important to read aloud to your child, that that is one of the most decisive factors, predictive factors of a child growing up to become a lifelong reader. But another factor is having books in your home, that the number of books correlates also directly with them becoming a lifelong reader. And again, I want to say in favor of libraries and for people who know that books can be expensive, you do not have to own these books. You can go to your local library and take out and have a rotating cast of books come into the house. If there is a book around sitting nearby, it's very, you know, it's very hard to tolerate a child saying, "I'm bored," because he or she can pick up a book. And so you need to also make sure that you have a diverse range of books. And I want to second what your other guest said in terms of the quality of books available right now. They have gotten really fantastic. I talked about, as she said, the diversity, but just in terms of quality, the illustration in children's picture books right now is so good. The quality of printing, the things that they can do, even with things like flaps and board books, that technology, the printing process has improved so much that for, you know, for toddlers, for babies, books have gotten better. And for teenagers, because those authors know they are competing with the internet, which goes at lightning speed, the plot in those books moves so fast. The emotions run so high and strong. If you don't grab a teenage reader in by page two, you're kind of done. And those authors know it, and they write to that. And so those books are very hard to put down. And that whole area of young adult books barely existed when I was a teenager.
You took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I can't even imagine. I read young adult books now because I crave just as much what they're doing as I would have when I was younger. Yeah, no, I was reading James Michener in the sixth grade because there just wasn't a lot of stuff with any kind of drama or felt like important to me.
No, you went and you ended up reading things like, I mean, you read Michener, so good for you.
Off
but
my
I
parents'
read
bookshelf.
Like,
I wasn't picking it out. I was just picking it up.
I read things like Sidney Sheldon and Danielle Steele. Like, you know, that was basically sort of, you know, genre, you know, commercial fiction for adults. And V.C. Andrews, you know, incest.
Yes.
So anyone who says, like, worries about YA not being appropriate, let me tell you, it is really appropriate. It's so much better than what there used to be. And what better way for your child to learn about challenging issues, about, you know, really strong emotional, social issues that they're going through than in a book? Wouldn't you rather them get it there than, you know, sort of on social media?
And from their peers, no less. Kathy, what about how the Columbus Metropolitan Library lays it all out for people when they come in and what they see? How important is that?
It's very important. You know, seeing the covers of books, seeing interesting books, enticing titles, we've got it at the library. You know, we pay a lot of attention to our displays and the customer experience so that when families enter a branch or the main library, there are plenty of opportunities to see that eye candy and to find good books right on display.
And as far as children and books, sometimes children can, you know, they want to paw them there. They want to touch them. What about how children treat books when they're library books? What are your concerns? I mean, or just let them have fun with them.
Just let them have fun with them. You know, of course, we want parents to
teach respect.
Respect to the books, but they're there to be enjoyed. The books don't do any good when they're sitting on the shelves at the library. We want them to be in children's hands. We want them to be in every child's home. Being enjoyed and being read.
Yeah.
I want to add to that, you know, children love new books, obviously, but there is a history to a used book. And I think that it's important for kids to see that, that the library, a library book is something public, that it's passed around, that it goes from child to child, that when kids are done with their own book, that they can donate them to a library sale or to a younger cousin, and that they think of books as something that can be sort of passed on the way you can pass on an family heirloom.
You know, here's an email from a listener. She writes, my daughter was a voracious reader from birth until middle school. We read together for hours a day, and as she grew, she would read novels while walking, upside down in a chair, etc. She loved it. All of a sudden, in fifth grade, she decided she didn't like to read, and that was 5 years ago, and she still doesn't. I am a huge reader and model the love of reading, always have. What happened and what can I do? Pamela Paul, what do you make of that?
Well, you know, the first thing I would ask, I mean, this is coming from a parent, so she knows her child best. Mm-hmm. What is it that the child likes to do? Because often things that the child is doing out there in the real world or perhaps on screen, you can follow that path through books. So again, it doesn't need to be a novel in the way that we might sort of think of as a traditional book. Perhaps that child is, you know, doing Minecraft and would like to read fan fiction based on Minecraft or Minecraft guides. That's fine. I think that, you know, again, we all have what we hope that our child will enjoy great literature, but as long as they're enjoying books, that builds the habit of reading and to sort of turning to that medium for you know their leisure in their leisure time. So I would say look to the child's interests and really cater to those interests in terms of the kind of books that he or she, you know, has in front of her. And then the other thing I would say is if the issue is screens, and let's face it, you know, that is the reality of today, then you do need to think, and I think every family needs to think about, well, how are we, you know, how are we functioning around screens in our family? What are the rules that we want to set for ourselves? And when you do that, you know, you talked about modeling as a reader. This mother clearly does read. We also need to model for our kids in terms of how we handle screens. So if we make up a rule of like, oh, 8 o'clock, you know, phones go away, that's for grownups too. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just be sitting there sort of scrolling on your phone and saying, hey guys, I told you it's time to read your book.
Right. Kathy Shabadagi, about that?
I agree, but I would also add to my advice to the mom would be don't despair. Your daughter, clearly, she loved to read. It's there. It'll come back. And so provide opportunities by keeping those reading materials that your daughter likes in the house. Mm-hmm. Keep them all over the place. You know, any place your daughter has downtime in
magazines,
the car.
Magazines, anything it might be.
That's right. Graphic novels, her favorite comic. Keep those around. She'll come back to it. But you know, don't despair.
I want to hear from listeners about what that book was that turned you on to reading. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Joanne in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joanne.
Yes, my favorite book was Anne of Green Gables.
Why?
Well, I just fell absolutely in love with it, and my name is Joanne. So I actually added the E to the N because it's two words. My name is two words. I actually added the E to my name after I read that because in the book, Anne says it sounds so much better with the E.
Yeah, Anne with an E. Yeah, as an Anne with a no E. Yeah. Yeah, it would have been nice, you know. But thank you, Joanne, for giving us a call. I appreciate that.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Those kind of books, Anne of Green Gables, I never read it until I actually saw the movie. And then I went back and read it. Yeah. Pamela.
One interesting thing. I mean, that book is still going strong with kids. And Penguin just issued what's called like a tiny book version of it. It's actually the size, roughly, of a cell phone. All of John Green, who's a popular YA novel, his books have all been issued in this new tiny book size, which is has been created especially to appeal to teenagers. And that you, it's still the full text, but you kind of flip through it in a very different way. And so they're clearly seeing those kinds of classics is still being appealing to teenagers today.
She dealt with, even back then, some pretty important issues.
Yeah, I mean,
it
I think
stands
that,
the
again,
test of time. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, one of the great things about teenage books for teenagers, and I think one of the reasons why you probably read YA, it's not just about the plot. It's really also about the character and about the emotions. Every emotion is so strong when you are a teenager, because you're experiencing it like for the first time, like that first love is so powerful. Those first rejections of feelings of being different, feelings of wanting to be like everyone else or not, you know, figuring out who you are and what your place is in the world. Those are all such powerful things. And these books really capture them so well.
Do you ever, Kathy, at Columbus Metropolitan Library, reintroduce books? Bring them out, or is it always what's the latest?
No, absolutely. We reintroduce books, especially when they've been republished or reissued with a fresh cover, new illustrations. And as I think was addressed earlier, families coming in see those books, the parents see those books, and oh, how wonderful to be able to introduce your child or the child in your life to a book that you love so much as a child. Too. And so those books are still going strong, and I think it's great when they're reissued.
You know, Pamela Paul, you mentioned something in kind of early on in the book about like a parent-child book club.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that, and what are we getting at with that kind of a thing? I'm wondering.
Well, I mean, this is just one of many tips that we offer to get readers or people, you know, kids like the daughter of the caller who said that her child hasn't read anything since she was 10 and she's 15 now. This is a way to bring kids back to books. So you can offer to, you know, a teenage child, for example, and say, hey, why don't we create a book club where you and your friends pick the books and, the, you know, the parents will all read them. It could be a mother-daughter or father-daughter. It doesn't really matter. It can be open to anyone and get together and read them all together. And that's a way, again, to encourage your child to keep books and to keep them in her life, and also to bring you into that, because books are a great way to have conversations sometimes around difficult topics, because it's at a step remove. You know, that's one reason why kids really like fantasy, for example, because it's much easier to talk about for many kids a situation when it's a character in a book than, you know, talk about it as something that they themselves are going through. Or, you know, when it's a dragon, for example, not even a human being, but the emotions are the same.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm going to turn to Stephen in Delaware. Hi, Stephen. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
So I wanted to bring to everyone's attention. I recently learned about this. I have very limited knowledge of it. But apparently the country star Dolly Parton has a program called the Imagination Library. Whereas any child up to age 5 receives free books to read to try and excite their yearning to read and motivate the younger generation to pick up books.
I've heard about that. She's pretty well known for that. Are either of you familiar with it, Kathy and Shabadagi?
Yes, I am. And it is a wonderful program that Dolly and her organization created. And it provides the foundation and the framework for communities or cities, organizations who want to bring that program to their community. It does require funding. Dolly doesn't provide the funding for the books, but does all the behind-the-scenes work. So in other words, which books, the good books have been selected, how to handle the mailings, the publicity, all of that is there. And I understand that First Lady Fran DeWine is working to bring that program to Ohio and to Ohio children. So I think we're going to see more to come on the Imagination Library.
Stephen, thanks a lot. You know, I remember when I was a kid, it was the Scholastic books were a big deal. And no matter how broke my parents were, they never denied me a Scholastic book. They weren't that expensive. They kept the price. I mean, are there still Pamela Paul? Is that another way to get kids to read, is to give them those kind of opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, the Scholastic Book Clubs are still, you know, those are distributed in the schools. The teachers, there's a whole sort of point system where the teachers get material for their classrooms based on the number of kids who order books through the program. And the books are generally lower priced. One thing that's interesting is, again, and this goes back to not being judgmental as a parent. Sometimes parents will look through these catalogs and think, like, you know, there are a lot of books in there. There's high literature and, you know, classics, but there are also a lot of books that are based on kids' favorite characters, whether it's from a TV show or a video game. And I do think it's important, again, for parents to let kids read those books. You know, I grew up reading Archie comics and Smurf books. It didn't prevent me from being, you know, we talked earlier about V.C. Andrews and Sidney Sheldon. It didn't prevent me from growing up to read, you know, Toni Morrison and Edith Wharton. So it's not that, you know, we have to remember that kids are just like grown-ups and that they don't always necessarily want to read, you know, what's good for them or challenge themselves. Sometimes they just want to enjoy themselves. And again, if you want them to become readers, you do have to let them figure out what it is that they want to do. The overall, one of the overall messages that we have in the book is that it's the school's job to teach your child how to read. You as a parent or a caregiver, you can support that. But your job is to teach your child to love to read. And so you need to allow them to pursue their passions and their interests in books.
And I would add that another way for families to get inexpensive children's books into their homes is through the library's Friends of the Library book sale. And in fact, that book sale is coming up this very weekend.
Okay.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the main library. Friday and Saturday from 10 to 5, and on Sunday from 1 to 4, main library, downtown Columbus. Books, children's books start at $1, and on Sunday, there's a clearance sale, so they're even less.
Great idea. Real quick, I'm going to talk to James in Aetna. You're on the air. Hi, James.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Well, you said call in and say what really got you reading.
Yeah.
I'm old enough that I grew up with the space race, and I was intrigued. I read everything about it, read lots of sci-fi, but the one thing that I loved when I was little was Tom Swift books. There was a collection they came out with every so often. I think there ended up being 27 of them. I had every one of them. Mm. I got to ride the bus down to Lazarus with my next door neighbor friend, and because we both liked them, and we bought the books at Lazarus and, you know, rode the bus back. It was just special.
Right. That's a really big part of the kind of the vibe you're trying to get across, Pamela Paul, is to make reading special.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, you know, when you talk about the library sale, for example, kids love collecting books. They love owning them. But I also think that it's really important for them to think of books as something that they can donate, something that they can give, something that people can give to them that they will appreciate and take care of and treasure. So we have a bunch of suggestions in the book for ways for kids to kind of learn to do that. And a lot of it, you know, some of it rotates around birthdays, for example. So at the end of a birthday party, you know, every parent, I think, dreads the goodie bag that your kid brings home from a party full of a bunch of, you know, sort of plastic junk that ends up in the back of the car for the next year. Why not have at your child's birthday, instead of giving out goodie bags, have your child pick out a favorite book and get copies of that book for everyone in the class or at the party, or have the child select books from his own collection and sort of have a pile at the end, and kids can grab whichever book they like. And another idea on the flip side of that with parties is ask a grandparent to give your child a book every year on his or her birthday, inscribed from that grandparent with, you know, a personal note, why they picked this book, whether it was a book that they themselves enjoyed as a child, one they thought that the child would like. And then that child has a shelf that, you know, over the years is their collection of birthday books from grandma, for example.
And back to the caller's love of Tom Swift and that series, I do want to point out to listeners that sometimes I see parents who get impatient with their child who is reading their way through an entire series and they want them to move on. But I want to make the point that when children get involved in reading a series of books, there's a comfort and a love they get from that because it's back into a familiar character, familiar scenario. And reading those series books actually helps them be more proficient as readers. It's okay for your child to be reading every one of the Magic Treehouse books or every one
yes.
of the Nancy Drew
yeah.
books. That's part
or the Warriors.
Of, yes, that's part of the reading journey for children.
Oh, Nancy Drew. I can't even. I mean, I read so many of them. We will continue our conversation. Want to hear what your favorite books are or favorite book was growing up, or maybe the one that turned you into a lover of books. Also, questions or comments for our guests, Pamela Paul, editor of the New York Times Book Review and co-author of the book How to Raise a Reader, and Kathy Shabadagi. She's public services director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about how to foster the love of reading in a child in a world where entertainment is at your fingertips. Reading might be in danger, but a new book is out there, and there have been many others written about how to foster that love of reading. Still with us is Kathy Shabadagi. She's the public services director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. Also with us is the editor of the New York Times Book Review, Pamela Paul. She has written, co-written a book with her fellow editor, Maria Russo. The book is titled How to Raise a Reader. Pamela Paul and Maria Russo will be in Columbus in November. For more information about that event, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And I still want to hear from people about what your favorite book was. Don't forget... And if you have a question or comment, you can give us a call as well at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. I have an email from Kat. She writes, as a preteen, I gravitated heavily towards Japanese graphic novels. And despite pressure from family to practice my second language skills through traditional literature, I can say the reading comprehension that got me through college language courses is fully thanks to manga. Please don't discount comic books in your child's education. Where else could I learn about Japanese culture and grow my German vocabulary and really enjoy the process all at the same time? I think you brought that up earlier, Kathy Shabadagi, as far as comic books and stuff. I, again, would reread them over and over and over again.
Yes, absolutely. My real strong advice is for parents to always value a variety of reading behaviors. And those behaviors include a variety of materials. So whether it is manga, graphic novels, magazines. There are so many forms of reading that are to each person. You know, there is a connection with some particular kind of book or form of reading that's special to that person. And certainly, Japanese manga is to many, many, particularly teen readers. And we do have large collections at the Columbus Metropolitan Library.
Right, Pamela Paul. The key there is just don't judge.
Don't judge. Yeah. I mean, some kids are really visual learners. They're visual readers. And graphic novels, you know, do what picture books do, which is they use art to tell stories. And that is a really fundamental part of learning how to read when you're a child. When a child reads a picture book, when you are reading aloud the text, they are reading the pictures alongside you. Sometimes they're getting a different story even in the picture. So that's something important to bear in mind when you're reading aloud a picture book to your child. There are two different layers that are going on at once. They might be laughing at something that appears in the artwork that doesn't appear in the text. And being able to follow a narrative through visuals is a fundamental part. That's a way of reading. So graphic novels really continue that. And for kids who do better with visuals, that's really important. And the other thing to think about, and I do want to emphasize visuals for all ages. Once your child is reading early chapter books, early reader books. Do not give up on those picture books, because picture books, you know, they should absolutely, we say picture books should stay in the picture. They have often a more sophisticated language than more sophisticated storytelling than early readers. So as your child is sort of getting his way through, you know, Pat sat on the cat on the mat, which is not that, you know, exciting a story. You can also be reading aloud Sylvester's Magic Pebble by William Steig to them, which has very rich language, really beautiful visuals. As, you know, Kathy said, kids enjoy a wide variety of stories. They can be doing both those things. And you could also be reading aloud to them The Hobbit at night. The same 8-year-old can get something out of all of those different things at the same time. And one other point to make about learning to read is I would not worry if your child still does want those comic books, those picture books, even when he's supposed to be reading. It's not about the age at which you really become an independent reader. That has no correlation with your reading ability later on. You know, in Europe, in Northern Europe, in Scandinavia, they don't even start teaching reading until kids are 7 or 8. So you don't need to worry so much about the fact that they might still want to read Peanuts or Calvin and Hobbes or picture books. It's all of that is good and is, as you put it, you know, no judgment.
Susan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Anne. Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, I wanted to tell you about my favorite books as a kid. It was a series of books, and it was about Terry Ames, student nurse, and doctor's office nurse, hospital nurse.
Army nurse,
I read the entire series in like the 3rd and 4th grade. But I also wanted to tell you about a program where kids get to read to therapy dogs. The only place I know of in Columbus is at the Lane Road Library. There's a gentleman who brings his dog in, and kids get to sit and read aloud to the dog. Again, there's no judgment. And it gives kids a lot of confidence. It's a safe environment for them.
That sounds wonderful. Does that resonate with you, Pamela Paul?
Oh, definitely. You know, look, reading aloud is a skill, and it doesn't come naturally to all of us. It doesn't come naturally to a lot of grown-ups, which is one of the reasons why we urge parents to start reading aloud to their child when they're 3 or 4 months old. You don't have to read to them something for them. They're not going to understand it, but you can read aloud your own book. It's something that you need to kind of get used to. There's a different cadence, but as long as you're reading aloud to your child, again, they're not going to understand it, just like the dog isn't going to understand it, but they're going to hear the enthusiasm. They're going to hear the emotion. They're going to like absorb that image of you doing that. They're going to feel your body next to theirs. It becomes part of what is a family ritual. And then I would say for kids too, reading aloud can be really nerve-wracking. And I would urge parents again, if your child is learning how to read and they're reading at home, it should not be about frustration. If they're struggling over pronouncing a word, you know, sounding it out, let them make a mistake. Don't force their way through it. A frustrated reader isn't a happy reader. They're going to have to learn those mechanics in school. So at home, especially if they are not doing as well as they want to, they might be feeling bad about themselves. You need to counteract that with very strong positive feelings in the home. So don't force them to, you know, make sure that they read aloud with emotion or with emphasis or read everything perfectly. You know, the other thing that's good to remember is that everybody knows, every parent knows that kids love it when grownups make mistakes. So if you trip over a word, which let's face it, we all do. Sometimes you're exhausted when you're reading aloud to your child at night. You know, laugh at yourself. Don't take it too seriously. Let your child laugh at you. Let them know that it's okay to make mistakes around reading. We all do.
You know, Kathy Shabadagi, libraries have changed a lot. I mean, when I was a kid, it was the librarian was telling everyone to shut up. Now you go into a library and there's lots of sound.
There's a lot of sound and there's a lot of reading aloud that happens in the library between story times when library staff members are sharing books onto Reading Buddies, which is an opportunity for readers at the Columbus Metropolitan Library who are between ages K and 3 to come to our Reading Buddies program. We offer this at every one of our 23 locations 3 days a week. Those readers can come and be paired with a buddy to read aloud. at their reading level. And our intent here is not only for the students to become better readers and more fluent readers, but also for them to leave feeling successful because they've just read with a caring adult. That might be a volunteer or a staff member, but they're leaving getting that extra bit of reading practice, that extra time with a good book, and that caring adult. And we also do have therapy dogs who come to our branches at times. It's not every day, but you're right. Kids like to read to dogs who are not only adorable, but also non-judgmental.
Tyler in Westerville, you're on the air. Hi, Tyler.
Hi, Anne. Thanks for having me on.
You bet.
Just want to make a comment. So growing up, I was raised by a single mother and never had a bunch of money growing up. And I had an elementary school teacher, like in the fourth grade, who would take it upon herself to pay out of her own pocket for a few of her students book fair, the book fair would come like once or twice a year. Mm-hmm. And then she'd pay out of her own pocket to basically pick up the tabs for a couple of the underprivileged kids. And I didn't really realize this until a few years down the road, and it really made a huge impact on my life and how basically my compass of empathy and reading and all that stuff. And it was really a great thing she did for us and my fellow peers.
Do you remember one of those books?
I was a big fan of The Little Treehouse as a kid. It was like a series of like a brother and sister who would go on adventures to different parts of the world. It kind of taught you a little bit about different cultures and different little bit and stuff like that, and really opened up the imagination. So that was one of my favorites as a kid.
Well, thank you, Tyler, for sharing that with us. I appreciate it. You know, there is the school, you know, teachers often are at the heart of a person's love to read. I mean, they're also teaching us to read, and we're getting tested on it, but teachers are doing a better and better job. I don't go into a classroom these days where there aren't just tons of books everywhere. Pamela Paul?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, people are worried about the state of the book, and especially because many schools are also integrating screens increasingly into the school day. But the message with the research that I cited at the beginning of our conversation, you know, that reading is so important for every aspect of a child's social, emotional, and cognitive development, that's really come through. And there also the research around a print-rich, a book-rich environment has also come through. So classes do make an effort to keep books in the room. I think that's really important. And one thing I would say that we should make sure our schools hold on to is that should continue into middle and high school. What's happening often with libraries at those ages is they're being converted into what are called media centers, often privileging screens and computers and sort of weeding out a lot of books. I do think that especially at those ages where kids are being torn in a lot of directions and do have often their own phones and their own tablets, their own laptops, that it is really important to make sure that those kids too continue to have books in the classroom, textbooks in the classroom, so that they do have those resources around them.
Yeah.
One thing I worry about is that kids who feel that they're not good readers in school, that the effect that has on their reading interest. Mm-hmm. An interesting thing happened a few years ago. The library worked with OSU on a small study related to our summer reading club. And about 100 students were second and third graders who had voluntarily come into the library, were enrolled in a study where we tested their OSU researchers tested reading skills at the beginning of the summer and then again at the end. And half of the group participated in summer reading challenge. Here was a surprising fact that came out from that, or finding, and that is that those 100 students, by and large, almost all of them describe themselves as good readers. However, the data from the pretest and the post-test showed that, in fact, most of them were only average readers. But by golly, they were there to participate in the summer reading club, mm-hmm. and they were good readers. Mm-hmm. And what does that say?
That's starting a love of reading. That's right.
That's
showing a love of reading. Kathy Shabadagi, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me here to talk about such an important topic.
Kathy Shabadagi is the Public Services Director at the Columbus Metropolitan Library. And Pamela Paul, thanks to you as well. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
Pamela Paul is editor of the New York Times Book Review, and she's co-author with her fellow editor, Maria Russo, of a new book. It's called How to Raise a Reader. They will both be in town in November. Check the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides for more information. Thanks to the AllSides staff, producer Mary Lee Williams, assistant producer Kyle McKinnon, AllSides interns Atia Ture, Tatiana Woodall, and Bobby Gerberic, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. Be sure to like AllSides on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at WOSU AllSides. And you can follow me, too, at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Thanks for listening. This is AllSides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.